Hello, and welcome back to the Automotive Podcast. To be perfectly honest with you guys, it's been a rough week for me. I've had two computers have their hard drives just die on me for no reason. And so this is my second time recording this episode, pretty much the day before it needs to come out. So I'm going to do my best, but hopefully in the future, computers won't give me so much trouble. Anyways, for this week's episode, I'm going to be talking about the JDM god itself, the infamous street racer, the Toyota Supra. So, for its first two generations, the Toyota Supra was not called the Toyota Supra. It was called the Celica Supra. It was called this due to the fact that it was simply a higher performance version of the already in production Toyota Celica. The Celica Supra had a more powerful engine. It was given a straight six engine, and it was first produced in 1978. The Celica Supra was brought around in order to compete with the new Datsun Z cars. It was Toyota's response to these kind of fun, performance-oriented cars. They're like, hey, we can do that too. Let's just take the Celica and put a bigger engine in it. And that's what they did, and it was called the Celica Supra. A little side note, in Japan, the Celica Supra was actually called the Celica Double X, although it was spelled out as Celica XX. Not only was the Celica Supra given a more powerful engine, its looks were changed a small amount. The Celica Supra had a longer body to allow for the larger engine to fit, which makes sense, and it was also given an updated front end, so the Celica and the Celica Supra were two distinguishable cars. With this straight six engine, the car pushed out around 110 horsepower. The displacement of this engine was 2.6 liters, and it was a single overhead cam design. This is pretty humble beginnings for the Supra. Compared to what it would become, these first Celica Supras were pretty low on power, and not really that crazy. I mean, 0 to 60 times were around 11.2 seconds. For the time, that's not incredibly low, but compared to what the Supra will eventually become, it's really slow. And Toyota started upgrading the Celica Supra pretty quickly. By the end of the first generation, this car's engine had an increase in displacement up to 2.8 liters. This allowed the power to go up to 116 horsepower. Transmission, 5-speed manual, or a 4-speed automatic. Other performance-oriented additions to this car included disc brakes on all four wheels, and it even came with the option of a limited slip differential. With the next generation of the Celica Supra, it was given a really big upgrade in the form of a dual overhead cam engine design. Having twice the amount of valves and twice the amount of cams to control those valves really allows the engine to breathe much better. Air and fuel can get into the cylinders with more ease, and exhaust is pushed out with more ease. All of this leads to a more efficient and more powerful engine. So this was a key and rather substantial upgrade for this car. With this new dual overhead cam design, the power was up to 145 horsepower. This generation was also given an important upgrade to its suspension. The live axle from the previous generation, which was used in the rear, was replaced with a new suspension that allowed the wheels to move independently of one another. This greatly improved the handling of the car and just made it much more driver-friendly. On top of that, this new suspension was tuned by Lotus, and Lotus is known for making cars just handle beautifully. So having someone with the expertise like Lotus tune the suspension on this Celica Supra was a big deal. It really improved the handling characteristics of this car. In fact, at the time, Car and Driver said that this second generation Celica Supra handled better than Ferraris, Lotuses, and Porsches of the time. Even though this Celica Supra wasn't all that powerful, it was really starting to move into a more sports car, performance-oriented, well, type of car. The fundamentals of what the Supra would become were starting to peek through a little bit. In 1987, some massive changes would come about. The Celica and the Supra would go their own ways. The Celica had some big changes in the fact that it was converted to a front-wheel drive configuration and made more of a passenger vehicle. The Supra, which dropped the Celica name, remained a rear-wheel drive car and started to move into its third generation. This third generation got an increase in engine displacement up to 3 liters, which pushed power up to around the 200 horsepower mark. This third generation Supra would also be the first Supra that was given a turbocharger. They went pretty low-key with the first turbocharger on this car, and horsepower was only raised by about 30 compared to the naturally aspirated version. However, this turbocharger also gave an increase of 61 foot-pounds of torque over the naturally aspirated version, so it was definitely an upgrade, but it was nothing mind-blowing or really, really big power. That would come later. By this time, 0 to 60 times were starting to drop. It was now down to 6.4 seconds. Finally, in 1993, with the release of the fourth generation Supra, the Supra became the Supra. This is the generation that everyone knows as the Supra. This car featured a smooth, almost bubble-like body. It had large, wide-open headlights and a pretty massive spoiler. Although the spoiler wasn't actually put on every single Supra, but that's part of the Supra look, is this big spoiler stuck on the end. And this is the Supra that would build a world following and become infused with the world of street racing and big power. This Supra is known as the Mark IV Supra. An interesting little connection is that the looks of the Mark IV Supra, which changed a lot from the previous generations, this Supra was reworked from the ground up, and it really does not look like the Supras that came before it. What it does look like, however, is the 2000 GT, an older sports car made by Toyota, and there is definitely a clear inspiration from this older sports car. Both are kind of swoopy designs, and both look great. Not to mention, they have the same engine layout. Specifically, an inline 6, which is an awesome engine choice. I almost want to say that inline 6 engines might be the best engine option out there. They're incredibly smooth because they have a natural tendency for the pistons to cancel out each other's vibrations. So they're very, very smooth engines, and they have potential for big power. So I'm not gonna quite say it, but straight six engines are definitely really good engines. The Mark IV Supra could be bought in both a naturally aspirated and a turbocharged engine configuration. The naturally aspirated engine would produce right around 220 horsepower, which is pretty healthy. But this is where Toyota really took things to the next level with the turbo system. If you got the turbocharged Mark IV Supra, this engine utilized two turbochargers, and the power was up to over 300 horsepower, specifically 320. So between the naturally aspirated engine and the turbocharged engine was a difference of 100 horsepower. That's a significant difference. These two turbochargers operated in sequential mode. This means that one turbo was used at low speeds, and both turbos were used at high speeds. This way, boost can be available at a wider RPM range, and it worked really well. With the boost provided by the smaller, lower RPM turbo, the car had a lot of torque at RPMs as low as 1800. The transmission was also changed to a 6-speed manual, which became standard. With this transmission and the turbocharged engine, the 0 to 60 time dropped to 5.2 seconds. And this is very impressive, as compared to other 0 to 60 times set by cars of the same age, the Mark IV Supra was really fast. Its 0 to 60 time was faster than the Corvette, the Mazda RX-7, the Mitsubishi 3000 GT VR4, the Nissan 300 ZX, and the Porsche 968. Unfortunately, while the Supra was really fast on the street, it wasn't that fast getting off of dealership lots. Sales started to fall near the turn of the century. Toyota stopped sales of the Supra in America by 1998. The Supra would be sold for a few more years in Japan, with production officially ending in 2002. And that's where it sat for about two decades. There was no Supra. The name wasn't used. It was not in existence. There were some little teasings, little concept cars, but none of them really came to anything until 2018, when Toyota unveils the new Supra concept at the Geneva Auto Show. The production version of this new Supra would debut at the 2019 Detroit Auto Show. But for some, there was a problem with this new Supra. It was kind of a BMW. BMW engineered and designed most of the car, and the engine that was powering it was a BMW engine. And this kind of hurts. Toyota makes Supra. Those go together. And while yes, it's still a Toyota car, it's still sold by Toyota, the fact that BMW basically made this car hurt some fans pretty deep down. Specifically, the new Supra is pretty similar to the BMW Z4 Roadster, and these two cars were kind of developed together, and that's why the new Supra is kind of a BMW. It shares a lot of its design elements with the BMW Z4 Roadster. Styling was completely done by Toyota, so how it looks was up to Toyota, but past that, most of it is BMW. And as I mentioned, they switched engines. They no longer used the legendary 2JZ inline 6 and instead used the B58 BMW inline 6. This isn't too surprising that they switched engines. The 2JZ, while being famous, is a pretty old engine now, but the fact that they went with a BMW engine was pretty shocking. Also, very sadly, the only transmission option for this brand new Supra is an 8-speed automatic. Although power is pretty comparable, set at 335 horsepower. So, for a little bit of fun, I decided to look into each of these engines, the 2JZ and the B58. I do want to mention, though, while I have learned a lot about cars, and I'm always learning more, especially through the podcast, comparing two engines that are this similar is a little bit outside of my scope. So I want to thank Dust Runners Automotive Journal for their article comparing these two engines. The first thing I want to talk about is square engines, undersquare engines, and oversquare engines. These are terms that relate to the bore and the stroke of the engine. The bore of the engine is essentially the diameter of the cylinder, and the stroke is the length that the piston travels within the cylinder. The ratio between the bore and the stroke is an important factor which determines the engine's power and torque characteristics, at least in a broad general sense. So, starting with undersquare engines. An undersquare engine is one that has a longer stroke than its bore. And the advantages of these kinds of engines is that they tend to have higher torque and can pull heavier loads. An oversquare engine is one that has a bigger bore than stroke. And the advantages of these engines is that they have less frictional losses and load on bearings, they usually can rev higher, and they actually reduce the engine height, which can help lower the center of gravity for the overall car. A square engine is one where the bore and stroke are equal, and this is kind of a balance between undersquare engines and oversquare engines. It's the in-between. You have a good amount of torque, and you have a pretty high revving engine. Although these, again, are very general, you can have a range. You can have a very long stroke compared to the bore, or the stroke could just be a little bit longer. So there's definitely a wide array of different configurations and different ratios that can be used, but these are kind of just general terms that give a general description of the engine's characteristics. The BMW B58 is an undersquare engine, which means it kind of has a little bit more torque. The 2JZ is a square engine, so it uses that compromise. Which one is better is a harder question to answer and one of preference. Personally, I would think that the B58 is better simply because for daily driving, having torque available is nicer than a higher revving engine because you're going to use that torque more often than getting really high up in the RPMs. Again, these are very general terms and it's all preference. There obviously is a big drive to make high revving engines. There are lots of driver-oriented cars that put an emphasis on high revving engines, like the Honda S2000 or the McLaren F1. But for a daily driver like the Supra, I would give a slight edge to the more torque from the B58. These two engines also have different engine blocks. The 2JZ has a cast iron block, while the B58 has an aluminum block. The cast iron is stronger, but heavier. The aluminum is lighter, but not as strong. Aluminum also has better thermal characteristics. Another thing to note is the 2JZ is way over-engineered for the amount of power the stock Mark IV Supra produced. And this is why the Mark IV Supra was so popular. It's really easy to make big power because the engine was ready to handle big power from the factory. The 2JZ has a forged crankshaft and really beefy rods and pistons. The B58 engine is comparable. It also has a forged crankshaft and pretty beefy rods and pistons. Both engines use oil squirters to help cool pistons. Theoretically, this means that both engines should be able to handle up to 600 horsepower, but the 2JZ could handle even more than that. Although, it's hard to tell exactly how much horsepower these can take and which one is the better engine. There are both 2JZs and B58s that have been pushed up to 1,000 horsepower. I believe there's only one B-58 that has done it, but it's been done, and that engine used a lot of stock internals. So both engines are definitely pretty darn beefy. The top ends of the engines differ a good amount. In the simplest terms, both engines have dual overhead cam design, and both can vary the camshaft timing. Although the B-58 features a variety of upgrades and technologies, including an integrated exhaust manifold, meaning only two exhaust ports are exiting the cylinder head, the B-58 can change both cam timing and lift. The fuel systems for these two engines are also different. The 2JZ uses the common fuel system, which is port injection, meaning that the fuel gets put essentially into the intake manifold. The B-58 uses direct injection, which means the fuel is being sprayed directly into the cylinders. The advantage of direct injection is more power and more efficiency. The advantage of port injection is a thing called valve wash. Essentially, what valve wash is that when fuel is sprayed into the intake manifold, some of that fuel gets on the valves, which helps clean them from all the buildup and crap that gets on them through just normal engine operations. The B-58 doesn't have this. The valves are not washed with fuel. So this could mean that the B-58 is a little bit more unreliable, as there can be more buildup on the valves due to it using direct injection. Both engines are obviously turbocharged. The 2JZ used a twin turbo system in its most powerful form. The B-58 uses a single twin scroll turbo. These turbo systems are a little bit different, and there are some slight differences, but for the most part, they both do a good job, they both have low turbo lag, and they both allow for lots of power to be made. Interestingly, both engines use relatively small turbochargers that give lots of low-end torque, but not much top-end power. It is expected that the B-58 will be less reliable, as it's just a more complex engine. There's just more stuff that can go wrong. And that's pretty much where it sits. The 2JZ is simple, beefy, and easily upgraded. The B-58 is complex, and maybe not quite as reliable, but pretty much equal in potential power figures. And in conclusion, I would say the Supra does not lose anything by using a BMW engine. Unless you're just a fan of Toyota and you want everything to be Toyota, I don't think it matters that much about a BMW engine being used in the Supra. They're very similar engines. They have both been pushed up to ridiculous power figures, 1,000 horsepower, which, let's be honest, no one really needs unless you're doing drag racing. And so I think one should enjoy the car and appreciate how it drives and how it feels, and not necessarily the name stamped on most of the parts. The one issue I do seriously have with it, though, is that it's an automatic transmission. It would benefit so much in just the fun factor, in just how it feels to drive and the enjoyment of driving it, if it just had a manual transmission. For those wondering why Toyota chose to go with a BMW-developed car and a BMW engine, it's all financial. They can save a lot of money for this relatively low-production car by using an engine that already exists. So really, it's not about making a better car or a worse car or making a Toyota car or making a BMW car. It's about making money. For the same reason, strangely, a four-cylinder version of the Supra will be offered this year in the United States. It's already being sold in Europe and Asia. And the main reason for this serious breaching of tradition is simply because Toyota can, cheaply. Due to the partnership with BMW, Toyota has access to the 2-liter turbo four-cylinder engine that BMW produces for its Z4. And if the engine's available and just sitting there, why not slap it in the car and sell it for cheaper, widening the potential consumers for the car? The idea of this four-cylinder version is that it would slot in between the Toyota 8.6 and the inline 6 Supra. So it's kind of just a mid-tier sports car. Little bit better than the 86, but a little bit less ridiculous than the inline 6 version of the Supra. It feels a little bit like they're watering down the Supra name. I think they should just stick with the 6-cylinder. But hey, I'm not Toyota, and they can do what they want. The 4-cylinder engine will push out 255 horsepower, and it will still use the 8-speed automatic transmission. The small advantage of this 4-cylinder car is that it will be lighter, simply because it has a smaller engine. It will shave off around 200 pounds. This means that the car will still be pretty quick, with a 0 to 60 time of 5 seconds. Also, this is a Toyota figure, not an independently tested figure, so take that one with a grain of salt. This year will also be the first upgrade for the new 6-cylinder Supra. It will be getting a good power boost up to 382 horsepower, which sounds fun, but hey Toyota, it'd be more fun if I could slam through the gears, you know, by myself. Like, how do you say that? Like I do it manually. That's going to be it for the Toyota Supra. I hope you enjoyed. This was a rather tech-heavy, engineering-heavy episode, and I always enjoy those. I've had the idea of doing episodes specifically on the parts of cars, like comparing different suspension setups or different forced induction setups. If you'd be interested in those, let me know, because that is a little bit of a breach from my normal podcasting, but I do think they'd be good episodes. If you'd like to support the podcast, the number one way to do that is to leave reviews and to follow the podcast on whichever platform you are listening. Also, telling friends and family about the podcast who you think would enjoy it means a ton. Other than that, I hope you enjoyed, and I will see you next week.